If you are enrolled, now let me say this first. Some of the most intelligent people that I know and smartest people that I know and lifelong learners aren't necessarily enrolled in formal education. They're readers. Some people are just seem to be born with this curiosity and passion to learn and discover and figure things out. My father-in-law was certainly that way. Kim has kind of picked that up from him. And Michael kind of has that idea, just wants to figure things out. And so it's not just formal learning, but for sake of illustration, if you are enrolled in some type of online class or formal class at a university, tech school, course, computer software, whatever, if you're enrolled in something like that, would you raise your hand? Okay? All right, now help me out and shout out some of your ages. Okay, some of your ages. Those of you, just raise your hand. 31. 27. 24. 23. 24, 16. 19. Anybody over 37?
31.
31? What am I thinking? He's like, Pastor, come on now. Come on. All right, I want to introduce you to Betty Brower. Betty Brower is a friend of ours, partnering church in rural Georgia, but Betty Brower just recently graduated from her undergraduate at 74 years old. 74 years old. This isn't a costume party. I mean, she went through, this was a lifelong dream. She's been a successful realtor for a number of years, and that has helped she and her husband be able to serve a very rural church, but a needed church in McIntyre, Georgia. And as we saw this picture kind of come across our Facebook feed about 2 months ago, it was challenging to look at Betty. And we've just recently been with Betty and her husband and the church there earlier this year. So it's neat to see that she's accomplished that with God's help. But you probably can't read the script here, but it says she's completed her bachelor's degree and is now pursuing her master's at now 75 years old. So Betty's not here. She'll probably never see this, but let's give Betty a hand for being a lifelong learner. She did not just think, oh, you know, goodness, why would I pursue this? I'm older, so what use does this have? No, she has pursued it, and God's allowed her to do that. Need your help here with a couple slides. As you look, there's about four of them, so as you look at these slides, try to figure out something that there might be in common with the slides you see here. Okay, so this is one of them. This would be over in Europe, obviously. This then covers even down into the Indian Ocean. And then we jump back over to North America and South America, and then again some additional ones in Europe. Any idea of what these slides might have in common? I'll start giving you hints.
They're maps.
They're maps! All right, good, yeah. He's a lifelong learner. Mike is into it. He is sharp. So one of the hints I'll give you is there's a man in our church by this name that has this name. So a man in our church that has this name. One of the locations by this name has a huge mall. And all of you are looking at me like, nope, it's not helping. Okay, in addition to what you see on the map, there are many other stores and churches that have this in their name. All right, I'm just going to give it to you. St. Paul. St. Paul or San Pablo or São Paulo, which is a city that we lived in, the state that we lived in for a number of years. But all over the world, there are churches, thrift stores, ministries, cities, villages that are named after somebody by the name of Paul, and many know of him as Saint Paul. Now, biblically speaking, every single follower of Christ is a saint in that, not because they are saintly, but in that because of what Christ did on the cross and has forgiven them of their sins, then they are justified through Christ's sanctification and not just their good deeds. But many know of Paul as Saint Paul. In Scripture, we see him as the Apostle Paul, is another word. But he also is called Saul, okay? And it's because Saul was kind of his Hebrew name, and then Paul would be his Greek name. And so we see both names being used in the New Testament. He didn't necessarily have a name change, but yet we see that often Paul, throughout the remainder or latter part of the New Testament, goes by Paul. But in the early stages, when he's still very identified with the Hebrew community, then he's referred to as Saul. But Saul, or Paul, was a lifelong learner. He traveled. In fact, I think the next slide may show you this. Okay, so he traveled. It's estimated that he traveled probably over 10,000 miles on what we know as missionary journeys, and going to different cities all throughout Europe, and then eventually over to Rome in Italy. But he traveled over 10,000 miles by foot, by ship. Not only that, though, but he wrote 13, possibly 14, if he's the one who wrote Hebrews, but he wrote 13 or 14 letters and books of the New Testament. So you say, okay, Pastor, so he walked a lot and he wrote a lot, but what else? Well, we're going to see in a couple passages today that Saul, or Paul, was a lifelong learner. And as we look at his life, I want you to ask yourself some questions, and you have them on your paper. Are you a lifelong learner or not? And as we look at Paul's life, some of these things will become clear and hopefully will challenge you to be a lifelong learner. Are you intentional about learning? Are you intentional about learning? We hadn't been in Brazil very long. Jessica was a part of an international Christian school there for just 1 year. And then Christina was born became of school age, so we needed a homeschool for financial reasons and other things. But when she was there at Pan American Christian Academy, she came home one day as a first grader crying. I said, Jessica, why are you crying? She said, I'm the only one in my class who only knows two languages. And we're like, get out of here. We're trying to learn a second language, you know, and you already have it down, it seems. But she had many other students in her class, a lot of good amount of South Korean students who knew English, Portuguese, and Korean as well. And so she felt intimidated that she only knew two languages. How many of you know at least two languages? Three? Four?
Two.
Two? Okay, good. All right, good. So Saul, or Paul, spoke two languages, Hebrew and Greek. And he was intentional about learning. He wasn't a slacker, but he was intentional about learning. We see in Acts, we're going to pick up in the story in Acts 21, he's actually at this point, he is being persecuted for the faith. During the morning, we're going to actually step back a little bit and see, you know, his previous kind of life and testimony and reputation as being a persecutor of those who followed Christ. But where we pick up in the story, he's being persecuted for his faith and accused of defiling the temple as a Jew. Other Jews accused him of defiling the temple. Yet he's a Roman citizen. We'll see this also. But a Roman soldier was sent with a task to kind of quell the unrest, but also spare Paul's life, in a sense, and kind of take him away from the mob. And so that's where we catch him, and he's going to address those who are trying to beat him and persecute him. Look at Acts chapter 21 and verse 37. As Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, so the Roman soldier has just gotten him, or soldiers have just gotten Paul to try to take him away from the mob. They're going to get him away from the people and take him into some barracks. As Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, he said to the tribune, or to the soldier, "May I say something to you?" And he said, "Do you know Greek? Are you not the Egyptian, then, who recently stirred up a revolt and led the 4,000 men of the assassins out into the wilderness?" Then Paul replied in verse 39 of Acts 21, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no obscure city. I beg you, permit me to speak to the people." And when he had given him permission, Paul, standing on the steps, motioned with his hand to the people, and when there was a great hush, he addressed them in the Hebrew language. And we'll look in a few minutes of some of the things that he said. So he was an intentional learner. He learned two languages, but yet we find him in a spot that he's very vulnerable. He's being persecuted. But he was also intentional about learning the way of his religion. And now is when we're going to step back a little bit and kind of see his earlier life as a student. When I just read in Acts 21:39, help me see if you can remember to fill in the blank. Paul says, "I am a Jew from Tarsus. Okay, he says, I am a Jew from Tarsus. This comes as he writes a letter to the Philippians. He's kind of reminiscing and even defending himself as a genuine apostle of Christ or a messenger of Christ. There's others who are saying that Paul, you know, is not worthy to be an apostle. And so he's defending this, but in kind of a ridiculous way. And he even says that, you know, I'm going to talk kind of crazy. I'm going to talk out kind of out of my mind. But of all the qualifications that I have, in Philippians 3:4, he says this, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. And so he's kind of stepping back into what he used to think was so important. What he used to think would give him great identity and great purpose. There were no elevators back then, to my knowledge, but this would be kind of like his elevator speech. Like, hey, you want to know who I am? All right, I'm going to give you the list. Here we go in verse 5 of Philippians 3. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee. And he just rattles through this list. If someone were to introduce themselves to you like that today, most of us would think, you're weird. I don't want to know like all the details you just shared with me. You are a weirdo. But to Saul, Paul, this had been extremely important because this was his identity. So this is his background, and then let's jump back into Acts, and he is beginning to address the people, other Jews, who are persecuting him because no longer is he this Pharisee. No longer is he one who is persecuting followers of Christ, but he has become a follower of Christ, and so this is part of his defense in Acts 22 and verse 1. Brothers, so he's addressing them as, listen, I'm a Jew also. Brothers and fathers, hear the defense that I now make before you. And when they had heard that he was addressing them in the Hebrew language, they became even more quiet, and he said, I am a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in this city, and he's referring to Jerusalem, educated at the feet of Gamaliel. Now, to most of us, when I just read that word, you're like, okay. But in that day, it would have drawn the response of like, oh, wow, you were Gamaliel's disciple? You studied with him? How impressive, how phenomenal. I want you to see that this is still a city that exists today. Okay, so this is Turkey. We have Tarsus right here towards the sea. And then the next slide will show us. So here again, you have Tarsus in Jerusalem. So Paul's saying, listen, I was born in Tarsus. I was born a Jew, but I was born in Tarsus. Anybody who was born in Tarsus was born as a Roman citizen. So he had a very unique privilege of being both a Jew and a Roman citizen. And so that's why he even said before, I'm of Tarsus, a citizen of no obscure city. In essence, he's saying, listen, I'm not this just guy from nowhere. I'm a Jew, I'm from Tarsus, but brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel. So he's passionate about learning his way of religion. We've seen that. He's kind of gone back in the past, giving us a flashback. But he had also been passionate, not just about learning, but about doing and practicing that religion. So much so that he did some things that really made him a fanatic. In our, you know, thinking today. Are you passionate? Not just about learning, but applying that and doing that. Some of you just finished the first week, and you're like, Pastor, I'm just trying to get through. Okay, I wouldn't consider myself as passionate. One of my best friends in high school, I'm actually looking forward to, I'm going to have breakfast with him in Macon, Georgia, Thursday morning, Lord willing. But we were a very small school. In Spanish 2 class, it was myself, him, Brandon, and our other good friend, Eric. 3 guys, that's it, in Spanish 2. And Mrs. Smith was the teacher of Spanish 2, and she kind of talked like this. She didn't really speak a lot of Spanish, but she was our Spanish teacher. And so as we would come in for an exam, Brandon, almost every time a test would be given, Brandon would look at Mrs. Smith and go, Mrs. Smith, if you would just give me a C, I would be okay with that if you let me not have to take the test. I mean, you know I'm a good student. If you would just give me a C, I'd be okay with that. Now, Brandon, you know I can't do that. You're going to have to take this test, Brandon. You just sit right. All right. And Brandon would sit there and take. He was not passionate about Spanish. Now, God has given him a great passion. He's a very successful banker, loves Christ, loves his family. So he's passionate about other things, but he wasn't passionate about learning Spanish from Mrs. Smith. Paul was extremely passionate. Not just about learning his religion, but actually like being zealous for that, being a fanatic in a sense. And we begin to see this in Acts 22 and verse 3. I am a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in this city, Jerusalem, educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to, get this, the strict manner of the law. He just wasn't a cultural Jew. He just wasn't like this kind of like, you know, oh yeah, my parents were Pharisees, so I guess that's what I'm going to identify as. No, he was all in. I mean, he was not embarrassed to talk about this. He wasn't embarrassed to persecute other people because of this. He was raised according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers. And then it says this, being zealous for God as all of you are this day. And then verse 4, I persecuted this way, and we'll see in a minute what reference that is. I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering to prison. Who? You'll see it on the screen. Men and women. I mean, at first you look at that and go, man, he was an awful guy. He was awful, not just binding men, but even women. I mean, this guy was a fanatic. He was passionate about learning his religion, but also just as passionate about applying it and doing what he thought was right. He was extremely sincere, but unfortunately, sincerely wrong. Now, when he said, I'm a persecutor, I persecuted this way. It's a reference back to John 14, 6, where Jesus himself says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. So those who followed the way were known as those who were now followers of Jesus Christ. Many of the Jews who had studied the Old Testament had missed the prophecies of the coming Messiah and were still waiting for the Messiah. They didn't believe that Jesus was the Messiah, so rejected him. But yet, then you had some like Paul or Saul who was persecuting those who had received and believed that, yes, Jesus is that promised Messiah. So he was a persecutor of the way. Now, to this point, would you say that Paul was, I'm not asking if he was correct in how he acted, but was he sincere?
Yes.
He was. He was extremely sincere. In his mind, he had no doubt, this is right. And I am defending the religion, I'm defending the faith that we have held for centuries, and now these new people are coming in, these followers of the way, and this false person who claims to be the Messiah, Jesus Christ, and I will defend to the death and even in participating and hopefully making other people die for following this guy. He was sincere in what he did. But thankfully, God worked in his life and he prioritized truth over tradition. And what we see next happen is nothing short of a miracle. To take someone like this who was so sincere, so devout, had studied since a kid under Gamaliel, and then had just followed in the most fanatic way of putting this into practice. But what we see next is nothing short of a miracle. Look at verse 5 of Acts 22. As the high priest and the whole council of elders can bear me witness, from them I received letters to the brothers, and I journeyed toward Damascus to take those also who were there and bring them in bonds to Jerusalem to be punished. As I was on my way and drew near to Damascus, about noon a great light from heaven suddenly shone around me. And I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And I answered, I think this is so interesting. Someone who studied the Old Testament since he was a child, who had this renowned rabbi that taught him the Old Testament, they would have read prophecies of the Messiah. They would have read passages like Isaiah 53, that describes in very clear detail the suffering servant. He would have read passages like the Prince of Peace, the Everlasting Father, prophesying the coming of Christ. But yet, Saul says in response to whoever's talking to him, he says, and I answered, Who are you, Lord? Who are you? And he said to me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. And I want to pause here for a second, and I want to encourage you. I know, and in no way do we want to make you feel bad, or we don't want to manipulate you in any way, but I want to encourage you, like Saul that day, I want to encourage you to ask this question. Who are you, God? Jesus, who are you? Do you exist? Were you a real person? Are you what some people say is the Messiah? Is your word that you revealed to, is it true? Is it trustworthy? God, are you real? As you're here, as you're exploring, as you're asking questions, as maybe you're just observing and thinking, boy, this David guy, he's kind of a kook up there, but that's okay. But I hope you'll ask, who are you? Would you reveal yourself to me? And I answered, who are you, Lord? And he said to me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. Then verse 10, and I said, what shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said to me, rise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do. Now God used a man by the name of Ananias as God was bringing Saul and really totally transforming his life. God used a man by the name of Ananias to be a part of this and to help Saul understand what Jesus would have him to do. And we pick up in verse 14. And he said, or Ananias said, the God of our fathers appointed you to know his will, to see the righteous one, and to hear a voice from his mouth. For you will be a witness for him, referring to Jesus, to everyone of what you have seen and heard. And then notice, we're going to jump back to Acts 9, because Paul is recounting what happens in Acts 9. And so we're going to jump back to Acts 9, and I want to look at a couple of verses. Notice what he says in Acts 9 and verse 20. And what? Immediately. And immediately. I mean, this was just like a total transformation that so many around him could not understand. Both those who were following the way, Jesus Christ, and others, Jews that had been like him, who were persecutors of the way, he confused both because there was just like this immediate and obvious change. And it says, and immediately he proclaimed Jesus in the synagogue, saying, he is the Son of God. And all who heard him were amazed and said, is not this the man who made havoc in Jerusalem of those who called upon this name? And has he not come here for this purpose to bring them bound before the chief priest? He may have, I don't know this, one day I can ask Paul, he may have still had those letters in his clothing. But yet he may not have even gotten rid of them yet, but he's got letters to bind people up that follow Christ to have them bound in prison. He might still have those letters of authorization from the higher Jewish authorities. And at the same time that he has these letters, he's beginning to say, nope, Jesus is the way. Jesus is God. Jesus is the Messiah of the Old Testament. In verse 22, but Saul increased all the more in strength and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving that Jesus was the Christ. There are some who are part of the One Hope family who just not too long ago adamantly rejected the message that I've just given you. There are some who not too long ago would have said, that is nonsense, David. Who would believe a thing like that? But all I can say is that God has done miraculous work in their life as well. There are others who had life-dominating sins. But yet they begin to ask, God, if you're real, Show me. God, if you're real, do a work in my life. God, if you're real, help me to see that. And God did. And they're followers of Christ now. Others, I can't forget the couple that sat across from the table, exchange professor from Sri Lanka, Buddhist by tradition, Buddhist all their life. But as they sat across the table we were talking about Christ and we had God's word open, and they weren't really followers yet per se, but they began to talk about what God was doing in their life. And they said this, we began to pray and just see if God was real, and we believe this now. God has shown himself to us. They didn't know all the terminology. They couldn't have defended a lot of doctrines that we talk about, those of us who have been followers of Christ for a long time. But they sat across the table and they knew what we have followed for years and years and years, and what our family still follows back in Sri Lanka. We believe that God is real. We're seeing God work in our life. And I would encourage you, ask the question, God, who are you? Are you real? Would you reveal yourself to me? Would you show me? It probably won't be a bright light in the middle of Marietta Square, but God can certainly do other things that are just as clear, so that you know this isn't a storybook. This isn't just for kids. This isn't just for somebody who needs a crutch and get encouraged. This is real, because God is real. So we look at Philippians chapter 3. First of all, I want you to look at 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28. It's going to be up on the screen. We're just going to kind of run through this passage. Because if you're passionate and intentional about learning, if you're passionate about learning and doing, if you prioritize truth over tradition, then you will be forever changed by the truth. One who calls himself the truth, Jesus, I am the way, the truth, because Paul was. Notice, as we kind of run through this passage in 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28, and you'll see some kind of bolded words here, but notice all that he faced because of who he now believed in and who he now followed. Imprisonments, countless beatings. 5 times he was beat with 40 lashes less one. 3 times beaten with rods. He was stoned, experienced shipwreck. He was adrift at sea. He was in a lot of danger, and we see from rivers, from robbers, my own people, Gentiles, in the city, in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers. He had sleepless nights. He knew what it meant to be hungry and thirsty and without food, cold and exposure, and the daily pressure of ministering to those in the churches throughout this area. Paul knew what it was like to have a life totally transformed, and he was forever changed by the truth. Even though he passed all of these things, and if I were to put this up again and say, okay, we're looking for 10 volunteers this morning to follow that path, and in the next year, you're going to experience maybe just half of what Paul experienced. Any volunteers? Most of us would be like, Pastor, where are the donuts? I'm not quite ready for that yet. But Paul was so changed. He was like, yeah, I want to get this truth out, and I will never be the same. I'll never look back and be, yeah, I'm circumcised of the 8th day, and a Hebrew of the Hebrews, Pharisee of all. And he's like, no. Christ has changed me. I'll never be the same. And that's where we see in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, he says, but he said to me, Paul is saying that God responded to this, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So we see a complete difference here. He's not going back to his pedigree and list of all of his accomplishments. In fact, he's saying, listen, I'm weak. But one thing that I'm learning, and God is reassuring me, is that when I'm weak, but because of his power, not my power, and not the good things that I can do, but because of his power, then I'm made strong. In Philippians, another letter that he wrote to a church, a local church in the city of Philippi, he says this in verse 8. Indeed, I count everything as loss. So all those things that he used to get his identity from and he would fall back on of like, no, I studied at Gamaliel's feet. And he'd say, no, I counted all those things as loss. Why? Because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ and be found in him, he says. And then he says, not having a righteousness of my own. He inserts nothing here. He doesn't say, no, but I've been a member of such and such a church. No. Oh, no, but I was baptized. But I gave money. No. He says, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith. 2 Corinthians 5:21, and I this is extremely important. It's the last verse we'll look at. Although Paul is known by many as Saint Paul, he himself referred to himself at times as the chief of sinners. He knew that he was only a saint because of what Jesus had done in his life, not because of what he could do and all the good works that he could muster up. And he wrote, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he wrote these words in 2 Corinthians 5:21. This was a letter to a church in Corinth, a church, by the way, that had many problems. But yet he said this to this church in Corinth, for our sake, he made him, Jesus, to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. You can be a lifelong learner if you're intentional about learning, you're passionate about learning and doing, you prioritize truth over tradition, but then most importantly, you will be forever changed if you do those things by the truth. Some of you have just finished your first week of class. Some of you have only been in the United States of America for a couple weeks at most. Some of you have come to a new university. You've transferred maybe from Georgia Tech to KSU, or some of you are about to head out to go to a new university. And there are many things that you will face that will be uncertain, that will be scary, but know that Jesus Christ is the way. Jesus Christ will be faithful, that you can always look to him. You can always count on him to be present. And understand that if you look around here, we'll disappoint you at some point. We love you, but we're sinners just like you are. But yet we've been forgiven. We've been redeemed by one who calls himself the way, the truth, and the life. Would you bow your heads, close your eyes this morning?